Headline for August 29th, 2010. Aside from wondering whether or not his friends will like his recent Facebook status update about having leftovers for lunch, local college student is unaware that his friends actually do wish to speak with him. Okay, I know that may not actually be a headline from The Onion, but the story is unfortunately grounded in reality. You see, for decades, the University of Michigan has been studying college students in order to measure their ability to empathize. So for those of you who have been saying that kids these days don't measure up, well, you might be onto something. According to findings released a couple of months ago about college students today, the same college students that might just have moved into this neighborhood and housing maybe up in Clark Kerr or the Units or in iconic Bowles Hall, well, to be safe, let's just say college students in general, as compared to those of 30 years ago, today's collegiates have been found to be 40% less empathetic. 40% less empathetic. What does that mean? Well, the study has broken empathy into four parts. And the two areas that have decreased markedly, especially since the year 2000, draw your own conclusions, are that of empathetic concern over the misfortunes of others and perspective taking, an intellectual capacity to imagine other people's points of view. Since 1980, these two markers were down 48% and 34% respectively. At a recent meeting of the Board of Canterbury at Cal, the official Episcopal presence on the Berkeley campus, we talked about what the findings of this study might mean. We all had thoughts as to why this shift is occurring, but the question that rooted our discussion that day and the one that I will have us consider this week is this. If these findings are true, that at this point young people are much less likely to be able to imagine how things look from another person's perspective or have concern for those less fortunate for them, then what might this mean for the well-being of college students today, for the cultural fabric of this country going forward, and eventually for our collective engagement with the world? And more importantly, what is our response? What alternative do we, as a faithful Christian community, have to offer? Our gospel this morning finds Jesus making trouble in two of the more familiar places, at the dinner table and on the Sabbath. This time it appears that he has been invited to the house of the leader of the Pharisees. And our text tells us that there is a lot of watching going on. The Pharisees are watching Jesus closely, and Jesus is watching the guests closely. And after a controversial healing of a man with dropsy, the tension is high. And, you know, Jesus is never one to pass up a dramatic moment. And what's interesting here is that he frames this whole section of teaching in the form of a parable. And at first glance, it's not quite clear why he does this. Because in this parable, there's no typical story like that of the sower or that of the prodigal son. But immediately following our passage chosen for this morning, the story in the Gospel of Luke continues with Jesus talking about what it is like eating bread in the kingdom of God. So, in essence, what Jesus is doing with this passage, as he does in all his parables, is showing what it might be like to live as the kingdom of God, and in this case, to look around the table at God's dinner party. Now, to be clear, this passage is not one in which Jesus plays Miss Manners. What he is doing here is much more dangerous and much more subversive. Because, as has been said before, the table fellowship in the ancient world, and especially in that of first century Palestine, table fellowship was tightly ordered. Who you ate with was just as important as what you ate. Status was methodically reinforced by who was at the table and particularly by where they were seated. And I realize that this is true for us today in some ways, from state dinners at the White House to the Real Housewives of New Jersey. Drama over who gets seated where is real. And who gets the invite still carries enormous social significance. But even to a greater degree, in the time and place in which Jesus lived, by the time the food was served, it was absolutely clear who you were above and who you were beneath. And to diverge from this order was to question everything on which the social structure rested. And yet this is exactly what Jesus does. Echoing Proverbs and Sirach, Jesus offers advice about what to do when you come to table. And again, this is not about manners. This is not about being polite. In fact, depending upon your place in the social structure, the polite thing might have been to go to the place of honor. Now, what Jesus is saying is that in this kingdom of God, your place at the table is found with a very different set of expectations. At this table, those who relinquish their status, who realize that they hold no honor greater than any other person, they will be seen in high regard. And then to further prove his point, he focuses his attention on his hosts in what must have been an incredibly uncomfortable moment. Jesus looks at them and upsets the apple cart again. If our purpose is to curry favor, or to feel important, or to climb the ladder, he says, we're eating at the wrong table. In this kingdom that is coming, there will be a banquet, but we are to invite the very people who can never offer the same in return. It's as if he is saying, start at the bottom and invite those to the table with no prestige or power. I tell you, folks, this is no way to win friends and influence people. Well, maybe the reading in the letter to the Hebrews can help us out. The one that might just flesh out our response to these findings on this study about empathy. In this letter, in the midst of what appears to be a list of aphorisms about hospitality and marriage, about being content with what one has, we hear this. We hear our response to the narcissism and individualism that seems to be on the rise in the third verse. It says, remember those who are in prison as though you were in prison with them. Those who are being tortured as though you yourself were being tortured. As though you were them. This, friends, is one of the greatest challenges we face as Christians, and one that I know firsthand to be easy to neglect or to sidestep. For if we truly put ourselves into another person's life, especially someone in pain or suffering, it can be discomforting, difficult, even painful. Goodness knows that it is easier to turn our head than to look a suffering person in the eye. And yet we cannot know God. We cannot know this kingdom if we do not allow ourselves to know the people and the world around us. For many at All Souls, this remembering became powerful around the Stations of the Cross that Nat Lewis offered our community this past Lent and Holy Week. For in several of the stations, Nat offered a contemporary image of Jesus' suffering, Whether it was the senseless violence claiming the lives of young people in Oakland, as has happened again this past week, or the relief of pain for those at the end of life, we were asked to remember, to be with those who suffer as though we ourselves were suffering. I believe this to be the second aspect of our response to a world in which empathy seems to be in decline. Our response is not original, for even though the findings of this study of college students might be distressing, given what we heard in today's readings, written a couple thousand years ago, it doesn't appear that the world has changed all that much. The world that these college students are being formed in tells much the same story of first century Palestine. The story goes like this. Take what you can get. Give only what you can receive in return. And the only way for you to have value in this world is to sit at the highest seat at the table. And yet, friends, there is good news this morning in this subversive, demanding, astonishing kingdom that Jesus is telling us about. Not a kingdom for a day far off, but a kingdom for the hour that is at hand. And it is this kingdom that we will offer college students at Cal. This kingdom that young people around the world, around the United States, that weary souls need to hear about. And it is this kingdom that we ourselves this week need to remember. Because our place at this kingdom, at this table, requires something different of us. A different set of table manners, if you will. For at this table, the place of honor isn't where we might expect it to be. At this table, it's found on bended knee. At this table, no matter who approaches, prince or pauper, old or young, all receive the same gift. At this table, the perverted structures of this world that work night and day to keep people in their place, that reinforce the dominance of a class or of a race, or of a gender, or of a sexual orientation, at this table, those structures hold no power. Friends, this is our response to a college student or any other who cannot see another way. Come, be fed, feed others at this table. For when we eat at this table, we understand ourselves and our value in this world. Not by our place in the pecking order, by who is above and who is beneath, but simply by our ability to see the other as ourself. Fellow guests at this table of love, no more, no less.